I heard you've had a very enchanting day. Lots of Maha Mantra chanting, yeah? All day? All day. Fantastic. You're ready for anything now. So, beginning with verse number 15. So, during my previous visit here in Naperville, we were discussing prayers of Prahlad Maharaj. So some of you attended those classes, or some of those classes, and we got as far as finishing text 14. So do a little review to get us up to text 15, especially if this little boy steps outside, that'll be real nice. Everyone here knows who is Prahlad Maharaj, right? Everyone knows who is Prahlad. Anyone not know who is Prahlad? Shh. Okay. So, we've been discussing chapter 9. Which follows chapter 8. And in chapter 8, it's the prayers of the demigods to Lord Nrisingadev, to pacify Lord Nrisingadev, because we'll wait for them. The whole section of the pastime related with the appearance of Lord Nrisingadev begins from the very beginning of the canto. Canto 7, chapter 1. It's a discussion between Maharaj Yudhisthira, who's seated at the feet of Narada Muni, and as you see, Krishna is in the assembly, and the other Pandavas are in the assembly. It's immediately following the Rajasuya Yajna, installing Maharaj Yudhisthira as the next king, incumbent king. So, during that function, Shishupal was in the assembly, and part of the Rajasuya function is for the most exalted person to be honored. So those of you who know Mahabharata, Grandfather Bhishma was invited to name the most exalted person in the assembly, and we all know what he had to say, Krishna. And as he was glorifying Krishna and Krishna and Krishna and Krishna, Shishupal was getting more and more furious and angry and disturbed, and he just burst out, stood up in the midst of the assembly, interrupting Grandfather Bhishma and insulting Krishna so badly. And Arjuna wanted to kill him. And Krishna didn't say no, he just held up his hand to indicate they should stop. So 100 times Shishupal spoke blasphemy against Krishna, and that was enough. It's a long detail that Krishna had given a word he wouldn't harm Shishupal. unless he did this 100 times. So he did the 100 times, and he was relieved of the talking part of his body from the rest of his body by Krishna's Sudarshan Chakra. And right in the midst of the assembly, the soul of Shishupal, like a spark, rose in the air, everyone saw, hovered in the air for some time, and then merged into the body of Krishna, Sayuja Mukti. And it was shocking to everybody in the assembly that everything, you know, you can imagine in a public assembly, the guest of honor is being insulted like this. So the assembly, the function went on, and when it was concluded, that's where chapter 1 of Canto 7 begins. Maharaj Yudhisthira has two main questions, and the whole canto is responsive to those questions. One was, how is it possible for someone so terrible, awful, offensive, mean, bad, to get liberation? When great saintly people and mystics and yogis and tapasvis and very elevated persons, they may try for lifetimes for liberation, not get liberation. And this fellow got liberation. We all saw it. How did that happen? And the answer that Narada gives later in that chapter, then it's expanded on further in the rest of the canto, is just see the power of the holy name. Although he was calling the holy name in scorn, in derision, he was calling Krishna's name again and again and again. And so he became relieved of the reactions of his reactions, not the propensity, but the reactions of his misdeeds. So he got liberation. So what to speak of somebody that calls Krishna's name like you've been doing all day long, trying in devotion to be attentive and calling for Krishna's mercy. How powerful is the holy name, is the message. And that message continues from the previous canto, canto 6, same message, at least particularly in the beginning, the Ajamila story by Ajamila calling Narayana when he was attending to call his son. Although his whole life had been so sinful, he was relieved of his sinful reactions just by even unintentionally. The power of the holy name that's showcased in the Bhagavatam in these two cantos very prominently. And the second question was, is there partiality or impartiality in the Supreme Lord? Because when Maharaj Yudhisthira was performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, the great sage Narada, responding to his inquiry, recited historical facts showing how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always impartial. Even when killing demons, in this regard, he gave a vivid example. And he gave many examples in the canto. And one of them is the appearance of Lord Nrisimhadev. And Lord Nrisimhadev, as a form of Lord Vishnu, killing Hiranyakashipu. So it looks like, on the outside, externally, it looks partiality. He protected Prahlad and he killed Hiranyakashipu. Looks partial. So, is he partial or is he impartial? It starts with chapter 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It's a long section just describing in response to this question. Because there's many other things than just this one question that's being responded to. The how Prahlad was recognized by Narada Muni while still within the womb of his mother as a great soul, a great devotee. And so he took Kayadu to his ashram rather than having her dragged off by the demigods, long story, to wait for the child to be born and kill the child because he's Ranikashipu Jr. And we don't want another one of Ranikashipu around. So Narada stopped and said, no. He's Ranikashipu's son, but he's a great, great personality. So Prahlad heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Narada, and he heard within the womb of his mother, but he heard nonetheless, and he heard attentiveness, even though he was within the womb, that he remembered everything after he was born. We can't remember Bhagavatam verses the next day, or the next hour, or the next 5 minutes. So he was a special soul, even within the womb. And later his mother forgot everything. She heard everything that Prahlad heard, and she was appreciating Vishnu Bhakti, as was Prahlad. But when Ranikashipu finished his austerities, she had requested a benediction from Narada Muni. May my son not be born until my husband returns from the forest having completed his austerities. So Narada gave that benediction and a second one. And the second one was that your son will slay many demons. So that's Narada's statement, and it was upheld by the Supreme Lord. Oh, no, he won't slay. He'll be the cause for the destruction of many demons, your son. Because demons are opposed to Vishnu, and Prahlad is a pure devotee. So he'll be the cause of Ranikashipu's demise. So now, is Lord Vishnu partial or impartial? He protected Prahlad and he killed the Ranikashipu. Or Krishna installed Maharaj Yudhisthira, or supported Maharaj Yudhisthira being installed as king, and Shishupal was killed. So it's kind of a mystery, but not so difficult to understand, that when Shishupal was killed, he was liberated, which is not ordinary, it's very special. And Lord Nrisimhadev, he was relieved of all the reactions of so many bad things. He's a bad person. Tried to kill Prahlad, attempted murder. He wasn't powerful enough to harm Prahlad. That was one of his frustrations. Anyway, so after chapter 7, after Hiranyakashipu was finished, chapter 8, the demigods who witnessed the whole thing, whole chapter of their wonderful prayers, but it was unsuccessful pacifying Lord Nrisimhadev because he was still in this transcendental anger mood that Prahlad had been put into such danger and difficulty. So chapter 9 opens the parts that we discussed already with Lord Brahma encouraging Prahlad to come forward and offer his prayers, because after all, Lord Nrisimhadev came to protect him, and maybe you can calm him down. We're afraid. So it begins, they're afraid, and the Lord is angry. And then even it says, even the goddess of fortune, who is the constant companion, eternal companion of Lord Vishnu, she was afraid. And many other things were explained. Prahlad felt unqualified. But he was ordered by those who he considered to be his superiors, the demigods. So he went forward and fell at Lord Nrsingadev's feet, stood with folded palms before the Lord, and the Lord was ecstatic. His anger just poof went away. And he placed Prahlad's head, and the verse says the Lord was feeling ecstatic. Prahlad was feeling ecstatic, but the Lord was feeling ecstatic. Just this pure devotee of mine. And Prahlad became relieved of any residual trace of anything of material touch. He became filled with Brahma Gyan, and he symptoms of ecstasy erupted in his body, and he began offering prayers in pure consciousness. So the beginning of his prayers start with text number 8, so we covered through 14. So 8, 9, and 10, it's a group, and it's expressing Prahlad's humility, describing his disqualification. The demigods, they're the ones that are qualified. Elevated birth, look at my birth. Eloquent and elegant speech, look at my, I have not even gone to school yet. Who am I? I'm filled with bad qualities, they're filled with sattva qualities. How is it the Lord is even going to pay attention to anything I have to say? And how have I gotten the fortune to even come before him? And it's not this, and it's not this, and it's not, there's only one thing. Somehow, I got some mercy from Narada. And Narada invested in me a little bhakti. And it's that little bhakti that is allowing Lord Nrsingadev to have me come before him. And although I'm not qualified, there's one good thing. Lord Vishnu is very merciful. And although I'm not qualified, because in what I have with devotion, with this little bhakti that I got from Narada, he'll accept my prayers. So that's where we ended. And we'll start with text 15. Now, one of the themes is going to show in this section. One of the themes of all, there's 55 verses in the chapter, and one of the themes is fear and fearlessness. We've already touched upon it earlier, actually. I didn't mention that in the review. But because the Lord was angry and the demigods are afraid, please put your anger away, which he had already done, because the demigods are intimidated by this. It's meant for Hiranyakashipu. The anger isn't meant for us, the devotees. So here's what he says. My Lord, who are never conquered by anyone, he refers to him as Ajita, I am certainly not afraid of your ferocious mouth and tongue. Now, even just using the word, the adjective ferocious, it sounds intimidating. Ferocious mouth and tongue, your bright eyes like the sun, or your frowning eyebrows. It says his tongue was moving back and forth like a sword. And he was roaring so loud. But I'm not afraid of those features, because I know that they're meant not for us, they're meant for Hiranyakashipu. I do not fear your sharp, pinching teeth, your garland of intestines, your mane soaked with blood, or your high, wedge-like ears. I don't know if you've ever watched. When I grew up, we had a cat in the house. And when the cat was ready to pounce on a something. The cat's ears go up like radar, and they're ready. So Lord Nrisimhadeva is showing a similar feature. Nor do I fear your tumultuous roaring. For those temples that have a drama on Lord Nrisimhadeva's appearance day, this is the little sound bite that goes with Hiranyakashipu coming out of the pillar, and he's moving around and chasing after Hiranyakashipu, and they're doing their battle, and that's the sound that goes with it. So he's roaring. Elsewhere it says, roaring so loud that the elephants flee out of fear. It's so loud, deafeningly loud. Oh, there it is. It makes elephants flee to distant places. Or your nails, which are meant to kill your enemies. He's not afraid. The demigods are afraid. Goddess of Fortune is afraid. He's not afraid. The comment Prabhupada gives in the purport. The lion is very fearsome for other animals, but his cubs are not at all afraid of the lion. And then he gives another example. The water of the sea is certainly dreadful for all living entities on land, but within the sea, even the small fish is unafraid. Why? Because the small fish has taken shelter of the big ocean. It is said that although great elephants are taken away by the flooding waters of the river, the small fish swim opposite the current. So, continuing with the verse, the purport. Therefore, although the Lord sometimes assumes a fierce appearance to kill the Duskritis, the devotees worship him. Keshavadrita, Narahari Rupa, Jaya Jagadisha Hare. The devotee always takes pleasure in worshipping the Lord and glorifying the Lord in any form, either pleasing or fierce. Those that aren't devotees don't get it. I mean, maybe you've had the experience that people that, particularly let's say Western people, when they see the image of Lord Nrisimhadeva doing his thing with Hiranyakashipu, they go, ooh. Indradyumna Swami told the story. He's from the state of Michigan, you know, motive goodness, family, and nice, and he became a devotee very quickly. And he kept in communication with his parents, but they're wondering, you know, what's up with our son? He's such a nice young man. And so they came to visit him at the temple, and the first thing his mother saw when she walked in the temple room was Lord Nrisimhadeva and Hiranyakashipu going at it. And she wanted to know, what's that? Oh, that's God. She went, oh my God. Or something to that effect. How to understand? So, text 16. Most powerful insurmountable Lord, who are kind to the fallen souls. I have been put into the association of demons as a result of my activities, and therefore I am very much afraid of my condition of life within this material world. Now, he just gave this description of what he's not afraid of. Now he's giving a description of what he is afraid of. He's afraid of the contamination of this material world. When will that moment come when you call me to the shelter of your lotus feet? He's already at his lotus feet. He fell at his lotus feet, and Lord Nrisingadeva very gently and lovingly picked him up from earlier verses. He's speaking in this humble mood as if he's one of us. We covered this before. Humility is another major theme of his prayers. It's just natural for one who is spiritually elevated. We discussed this. It's one of the features that they're incredibly humble. It's beyond imagination humble. Very humiliatingly humble. Embarrassingly humble. They don't feel themselves qualified. And that's part of their qualification. So, in one sense, he's speaking like he's one of us. Although, he's already there. He's at the lotus feet of the Lord. He's being given that shelter. So, our acharyas say his message is, I'm afraid of the bad association, which produces aversion to you. That's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He's not afraid of the Lord's fierce feature. He's afraid of bad association. Prabhupada's purport. Everyone is put into conditional life according to his karma. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj, representing all the other conditioned souls, admits that he was put into life among the asuras because of the results of his karma. Now, later, in the 10th chapter, he describes specifically, he mentions that Lord Narayana, he feels great compassion for souls that struggle in this world, dealing with the modes of nature and their fruitive activities. He feels compassion for that unnecessary suffering that they're undergoing, and therefore he sent me, presumably from Vaikuntha, to this realm. So he didn't take birth because of his past karma. It really wouldn't make sense, because Narada recognized him as an elevated person even before he was born. So where was he before he was born? Before he was in the womb of his mother. He was a great soul. But he's speaking as if he's one of us. To karma, one may take an unfortunate birth. And I've got all this bad karma stuff to deal with. It's a big burden, big problem. The Lord is known as Kripana Vatsala because he is extremely kind to the conditioned souls. So now, this is touching on the topic of, is he equal to everyone or is he partial? He's likening himself to a bad person with bad karma and very fallen. I mean, throughout from the very beginning, as soon as he starts, and he's still doing it. But the Lord is kind upon such persons, such individuals. The Lord is extremely anxious to deliver the conditioned souls. And there's one conditioned soul. That's Ajamila, and he's being delivered by the Vishnu Dutas because he was calling his son's name Narayana at the time of death. And this image is meant to show that within the Vedas, those who, it's a merciful manifestation of the Supreme Lord to reveal our true shelter. So if we just take advantage of these wonderful literatures, then we're rescued. from the material condition, material circumstance. Next verse in his prayers. O Great One, O Supreme Lord, because of combination of pleasing and displeasing circumstances, and because of separation from them, one is placed in a most regrettable position within heavenly or hellish planets, as if burning in a fire of lamentation. Although there are many remedies by which to get out of miserable life, any such remedies in the material world are more miserable than the miseries themselves. Therefore, I think that the only remedy is to engage in your service. Kindly instruct me in such service. I highlighted Vada me tava dasya yogam. Please instruct me in such service. He's finding, this is part of humility, that he's not finding a hope for happiness in that which is temporary. It was said already when the Lord touched his head, whatever little residual trace of contamination or contact with matter was gone. But he's totally attached to the personality of Godhead and totally detached from anything that's temporary. That as far as he's concerned, whether it's, he'll say further in further prayers, but from the highest, same as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, from the highest planets down to the lowest, his problems. Repeated birth and death take place. And in between birth and death, there's old age and disease and other disturbances. So I don't think I want that. I know I don't want that. What I want is your service. And he understands the merciful nature of Lord Nrisimhadeva. He wants to benedict him. You want to give me a benediction? Teach me the ways of devotional service. Prabhupada's purport. Material opulence may be somewhat pleasing for the time being, but to come to that position, he had to accept many miseries. Elsewhere, the language of the Bhagavatam is ugra karma. Pungent activities, very, very difficult. Like something that's close to home in New York. Just a little while ago, they had a something or other 100th or whatever it was anniversary of the building of the Brooklyn Bridge. It's kind of like a landmark and has its fame. In the course of describing the history of building the Brooklyn Bridge, they revealed many, many hundreds of workers lost their lives just building that bridge. I don't know why that happened, but it happened, and it was really an ordeal. I guess they didn't have technology that spared people's lives or something. So Pavarga. Some of you know Sanskrit. Pa-pa-pa-pa-ma. Yes? No. Some of you know. Pavarga. Okay. That the first one, the liberation is called apavarga, and material existence is pavarga. And our acharyas have described that each of those pa, pa, ba, ba, ma indicate material activity. So we'll go through it, because I've heard Prabhupada say this probably 50 times. Pa, prishrama, intense activity, hard labor, prishrama. And pa comes from the word, or builds the word fena, or foam at the mouth, like a horse, or somebody that works very hard. very, very hard, very, very hard to stop. And baha, bondage to that fruitive work. And bha, bhaya, fear. And ma, death. Pa, bha, ba, bha, ma. I took a Sanskrit lesson just by listening to Prabhupada. So, apavarga is the option. It doesn't mean that persons who are on the path of apavarga or liberation are lazy. No. Laziness is not something that's part of spiritual life. But the purpose, the objective, and the experience that goes along with the purpose and the objective is altogether different. Altogether different. Just a little sharing it because I heard this and I was really astonished. It's cold out, yes? I looked at the temperature this morning was -5. That's Fahrenheit. You know how cold it is in Toronto? It's, according to the person that was speaking to us, it's -23 Celsius. I don't know what that is Fahrenheit, but it's cold. And it's record-breaking cold, 11 degrees colder than ever the recorded history of Toronto. It's colder than the North Pole in the last this cold spell. Colder than the North Pole. I mean, just even thinking of the North Pole. But Vaisheshika Prabhu visited them sometime in early December, and they got Vaisheshika Prabhu energized, like we experienced when he's here. They made a pledge, you know, what he asks for. They made a pledge. They would distribute so many sets of Bhagavatams and this and that. So their Sankirtan leader made a plan. There's 50 teams, 50, going out in this colder than the North Pole weather in Toronto. They're doing door-to-door, so hopefully they'll get inside the doors, extra impetus to get in the door. But, you know, to meet their pledge. And they're narrowing, at least, I don't know if they crossed the finish line yesterday evening, but I imagine they did because they're so determined. Now, that's painful, cold, biting cold. But they were in bliss. I mean, not because of the cold, but because of that service, and they were using, you know, WhatsApp and all, you know, it's, hey, we got another set over here. Hey, we got another two sets over there, and just, hey, let's keep going. And they were enthused despite the austerity. That's the message I wanted to share. So in the life of devotion, there may be some inconvenience or something, some difficulty that we undergo. But it's like love, like the mother's love for a child. When I look at what mothers do, it's yikes. It's very difficult. Those of you that have children know exactly what I mean, or those that have been mothers. I mean, but mothers aren't complaining. They want another child. They love it, without all the detail. So I look at it and go, yikes. But then, you know, for there, that's happiness for mothers. The cleaning up the messes and the whole shebang. Because of love. It's not pain. It's affection. So a life of devotion brings rising above the duality of material existence. The happiness and distress, the good fortune, ill fortune, rising above even trying to be the enjoyer of the good fortune, because that just leads to getting sucked into the next thing that comes around in the misfortune department, the duality of material existence. Life of devotion lifts one above that difficulty. The fact is that in material life, whether one is miserable or happy, Prabhupada's purport, both conditions are miserable. There's an option. If one actually wants happy, blissful life, one must become Krishna conscious and constantly engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. That is the real remedy. That's the message of Prahlad. He's not afraid of the future of Lord Srinadev. He is afraid of that association that could take away his attraction for the Lord. And he's not enamored by heaven or hell, fear of hell and attraction for heaven, or any other temporary situation. Here's our Acharya Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur commenting. Lord Nisringadev to Prahlad, what will you do by serving my feet? Please, enjoy happiness from the wealth of the three worlds. Prahlad, I experienced the fire of lamentation through birth, with separation and attainment of wanted and unwanted objects in all wombs. Even in the body of a king, this lamentation is present. But there are many remedies for the fire of lamentation. That's Lord Nrsingadev. The remedy for suffering only produces more suffering. But still, I'm happy. Even in the body of a pig, I wander about. Please tell me the method of being your servant. By which method should I attain your service? Please tell the truth. If I have service to you, I have no suffering in any womb. It's the, Apavarga message, liberation. You know the story of Indra becoming a hog? Do you know that one? You know who Indra is, right? You know who the spiritual master of Indra, his name is? Fantastic. So, one time, unfortunately, Indra made a boo-boo. He offended Brihaspati. And he offended him so badly that he cursed him, "You become a hog." And poof, Indra fell to the material world and became a hog. And he was living a hog life because that was the body that he had. And he got a wife, and they had little piglets, and he was enjoying, life in the pig pen. After some time passed, Lord Brahma came and said, "All right, time, you've done your sentence in a pig's body, now you can come back to heaven." And Indra said, "Oh, wait a minute, I have so much responsibility. I have so many piglets to look after, and I'm eating very nicely and have a nice place to stay. No mortgage, no taxes, everything's fine." He didn't want to return. He became attached to the circumstances of his life. Text 18. Oh, my Lord Nrsingadev, by engaging in your transcendental loving service in the association of devotees who are liberated souls, I shall become completely uncontaminated by the association of the three modes of material nature and be able to chant the glories of your Lordship, which are so dear to me. I shall chant your glories following exactly in the footsteps of Lord Brahma and his disciplic succession. In this way, I shall undoubtedly be able to cross the ocean of nescience. Another theme that's natural theme, but it's kind of a compare and contrast of the promise of happiness over here, the promise of happiness over there, and the real standard of happiness that comes from devotion to the personality of Godhead. Devotion to the personality of Godhead can break the bondage of material existence. just hearing a lecture and describing it in Chicago during our weekend, Prabhupada was using the phrase that the seed of affinity for matter, that the Sanskrit phrase is asat trishna. Asat means mean temporary, and trishna means thirst. So we come to the material world and we're bound to the material world by this seed of hankering, aspiring to become an enjoyer of the temporary. So even one may go up very, 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 very high by some method, austerity or sacrifice or yoga or meditation or something. As long as the seed of enjoy place is there, one will be drawn back down again. So bhakti, Prabhupada was explaining this so nicely, bhakti is meant specifically to, his language was, crush that seed. Now it doesn't mean your existence gets crushed, your spirit soul doesn't get crushed, but the affinity that binds one to material existence and thus suffering, it's relieved. So he's asking for instruction in devotional service for this reason. Because that's what he's attracted to. He isn't attracted to the temporary. He doesn't want any benediction from Lord Srinadev to become a king or become a enjoyer of opulence or anything. Nothing. He wants the association of Narada, because that's it's indirect reference, but in your disciplic succession, the disciplic succession of Lord Brahma. Because who is the spiritual master of Prahlad? Narada. And who is the spiritual master of Narada? Lord Brahma. And who is the spiritual master of Lord Brahma? Krishna himself. So he wants that association, because in that association his aptitude for being engaged in this way will be nourished through that good association. That's what he wants. And then this ocean of nescience I can cross beyond. So we need such association, and such qualified persons, when they give their association to people of this world, such good fortune. I don't know how often, I travel every now and then to get an airplane and go somewhere. And from time to time I meet people that say, I met Srila Prabhupada and he came to our home in Bombay and this thing and that thing and the other thing. And I can't help but, I don't say it, but I can't help but thinking, why didn't you just become a devotee? And if they, so in one sense they're devotional, in the sense that they have some appreciation, but it's kind of like, you know, I had some association with Michael Jackson or something like that, or, you know, a celebrity. It's not exactly like that, because Michael Jackson wasn't a spiritual person. Prabhupada was a spiritual person. But, I don't know, maybe 20, 25 people that say they met Prabhupada and to have some appreciation, that's nice. But we have said more than just, oh, he was so nice. I'll tell a little Prabhupada story. Mrs. Major, Jewish lady, had two sons who both became devotees. I don't need to say their names. But she really liked Prabhupada. The first time I met her, I was on a japa walk in Brooklyn. And it was the Brooklyn Promenade. It overhangs the BQE, and you can see the skyline of Lower Manhattan from there. So I was just going for a japa walk with another devotee. And this elderly lady came over to me. And, oh, Hare Krishna! My son so-and-so is a devotee. And then the very next thing is, Prabhupada was such a nice man. I mean, she wasn't a sadhaka, but she had It wasn't like he took my two sons away. Prabhupada was such a nice man. And this described the exchanges that he was so kind. He didn't place on Mrs. Major that she would do the same thing her two sons did, but he was so kind to her, and appropriately so. She's given two sons to serve Krishna so wonderfully for years and years and decades, in fact, still serving both of them, Prabhupada disciples. And then I met her one other time, and she didn't remember seeing me, but I remembered seeing her because it was the second time, and it's the same thing. Prabhupada was such a nice man. But it wasn't, you know, I have some, I associated with celebrity. It was appreciating with devotion his nice qualities. So when there is such a qualified person who gives their association to those of this world, great good can be done. Attachment for glorifying the Lord by hearing and chanting the holy name and activities of the Lord certainly brings one to the position where material contamination is absent. And accepting the thoughts of exalted authorities through disciplic succession is certainly much easier than the method of mental speculation by which one tries to invent some means to understand the absolute truth. The best process is to accept the instructions of the previous acharyas and follow them. Then God-realization and self-realization become extremely easy. Prahlad is giving us the means of apavarga, giving us the means of leaving the material circumstance. Later on, Lord Nrisingadeva tells him, after he finishes his prayers, Lord Nrisingadeva speaks. One of the things that he says is, "You pleased me very much, and because your father is now deceiving for the duration of the life of Manu," which is a long time. That's a lot of yuga cycles. 71 yuga cycles. That's a long time to be king. A long time to do anything. So he's not attached to that. But if it's a service given to him, he's ready to do the service that's given to him without attachment. Later, we'll come to this stage. He says, controlling things? I already saw it. My father, he was the top guy in the whole universe. He took over the king of heaven's position, who was ruling everything, and in a flash it was all gone. So no thanks. No thanks. I just want Narada's association. Now, with Narada's association, then one can become detached from nescience and able to serve Krishna in any situation at all, without fear, without affinity for matter, without false renunciation. That's very rare. But the association of such an exalted person is the doorway into that higher realm. And we're almost done for this evening. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, "Though you attain service to me, still you should seek out some other solution for the miseries of material life." This is the rationale of Lord Nrisingadeva testing Prahlad. Prahlad reveals some anger. "Why are you speaking like this? Your pure devotee is famous as a servant of Narada. I, Prahlad, do not accept gyan or karma like others. Even in my dreams, chanting your pastimes, I surpass the gunas. If I have surpassed the gunas, what is the question of so-called suffering or the solution for suffering?" Lord Nrisingadeva, "But one sees suffering in devotees also." Prahlad, I will quickly, completely cross over the pain of separation from you, attaining direct service to you will not be delayed long because of the mercy from chanting about you. I will associate with your associates whose abodes are the lotuses of your feet, and they will bring me to you. Brahma has also glorified you, because the previous chapter was his prayers. Since these topics are authorized by him, there is definite value for anyone in chanting your glories. You are the master of the devotees, having madhurya, sakya, and dasya rasa, like me. So Prahlad is in this dasya rasa. He wants to be simply engaged in service to Lord Nrisingadev. And he says it later, he only sees the Lord as master. It's the beginning of the next chapter. I know that you want to give me a benediction. You've already said, because later at the end of this chapter, I want to give you a benediction, ask for something. That please don't ask me to ask for something. And he gives multiple reasons. I'm born in a demoniac family, and if I ask for something, it'll be demoniac. It'll be detrimental to me and everybody else, so please don't even ask me. And then another explanation he gives is, if one asks something from the master, then it's like a merchant. It's a business arrangement between the master and the servant. And similarly, a master that gives awards to the servant is not a good master, because then it simply bewilders the mind of the servant. Because in the real relationship of master and servant, that's our relationship, there's only one thing. You're the master, I'm the servant. There's nothing else between us. I really like it. It's dasya rasa. It's like Hanuman and Ram. Hanuman doesn't need anything other than some service, and there he goes, doing the service. That's his happiness. He's just waiting for some word from Ram, some service. There he goes. So Prahlad isn't Hanuman, but the mood is the mood of Dasya. There's nothing else. There's nothing else. Don't ask me to ask for anything. Give me service. Give me the association of Narada, who will teach me the ways of service. You give me instructions in service. Give me some service. And there's nothing else. It's unmixed bhakti. He's teaching the way by his words, although he's speaking as if he's one of us. And the way to get beyond his limitations, we're hearing, is that process of hearing and chanting in the association of such qualified persons. And then this nescience that's inbred in my body, because I'm born in a demoniac family with bad qualities and bad association and bad circumstances, I can transcend it by the mercy of Narada and the process of bhakti. I mean, it's the Bhagavatam's teachings, but we're hearing it right in the form of his prayers. It's really nice. Text 19. My Lord Nrisingadev, O Supreme, because of a bodily conception of life, embodied souls neglected and not cared for by you cannot do anything for their betterment. Whatever remedies they accept, although perhaps temporarily beneficial, are certainly impermanent. Prabhupada's comment, for example, a father and mother cannot protect their child. They may try, or a doctor may make the best effort to give health and well-being to their patient, but they can't guarantee that. And a boat on the ocean cannot protect a drowning man. So where's the protection in the place that's temporary and dangerous and limited? Ultimate shelter is in the Lord. The one who takes shelter of the Lord is protected. This is guaranteed. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, this is Prabhupada's purport, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashati, O son of Kunti, declare it boldly, my devotee never perishes. Doesn't mean we'll never have difficulty or tribulation or it gets too cold or somebody may die or somebody may say something harsh or you're mistreated or it doesn't mean those things won't happen because now you've become a devotee. It's the world of duality and the world of the cheaters and the cheated. So it's the place isn't a nice place. The goal is not to make a place that's not a nice place a nice place. To make a desert a place of abundance of water. It's not the goal. By nature it's like it is. But how to, by consciousness, rise above that, be fixed in transcendental consciousness while doing your to the intelligence and ability given to you, how to be in service to Krishna. I heard, Premananda shared with me, something that happened the other day. She shares lots of things that happened out here, but the youth that went to the next-door neighbors. Well, senior citizens that are getting assistance care kind of in two groups went out and so old age and the body's breaking down and they need assistance and it's probably, you know, very sad life. What they're just waiting for when they kick the bucket and in between it's pain and solitude and sorrow. So what are you going to do? Give them life. And it's a natural thing to do. It's a wonderful thing to do. And there's suffering of all kinds out there, as we all know. Maybe in your own lives, degree of suffering and difficulty and turmoil and those things. And it comes and it goes. So the intention is not to make it heaven, or a place where there's no difficulty. The intention is to bring consciousness to the transcendental position, where we tolerate, just like in these images, Prahlad is tolerating, and he's remaining very peaceful and prayerful and remembering the Supreme Lord, and he's protected. That's the message that Prabhupada is passing. Again, protected doesn't mean you won't stub your toe or you can go driving and you'll never get in a car accident or etc. Doesn't mean there's not misfortune in this world. Krishna's protection, ultimately your bhakti is protected by your taking shelter in the personality of God. We were discussing this during this weekend. Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. Okay, so I'm going to stop there. I've been a pretty patient group. I finished the set of verses. We'll continue tomorrow where we left off. Any comments or questions? Oh.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much for a very insightful lecture. So earlier in the lecture you were discussing how Prahlad was saying, I'm not afraid of...
Not afraid.
...of this form, this yeah. aspect. Mm. But however we see the demigods were fearful.
They were.
Mm-hmm. And they were actually taking shelter of the Lord for protection from Hiranyakashipu.
Yes.
So what aspect in the demigods made them fearful of their shelter itself?
Well, there's a really wonderful transcendental answer. And it's right in the first verse, the word adbhuta. Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur explains that the goddess of fortune, it says that she, the second verse says she hadn't seen that form before, but she's the goddess of fortune. And so Vishwanath says, in previous kalpas, when the Lord appears in this world, she saw that form. And there's the form of Nrisimhadeva in Vaikuntha, and she's the goddess of fortune always with the Supreme Lord. So she certainly saw that form. But by the influence of Lila Shakti, he uses the phrase, we would normally say by Yogamaya, potency, she forgot. And she forgot for a purpose. It was to create a mood of adbhuta, or astonishment. And astonishment is one of the seven secondary rasas. You're familiar? Five primary, seven secondary. And the way that it works, according to Nectar Devotion, each one of us has a fundamental primary rasa, one of the five. And there's seven others that sometimes they become very prominent and they seem to eclipse, overwhelm the primary rasa. And one of those seven is adbhuta, astonishment. So it's the influence of the Lord's Lila Shakti that the demigods felt what they felt, and the goddess of fortune felt what she felt, because demigods are elevated but not 100% pure, and the goddess of fortune is 100% pure. So her astonishment influenced their mood of astonishment to amplify the mood of love within their primary rasa. A little complicated, but you follow. The simple way of saying it is Yogamaya.
Maharaj, in the same lens, maybe you answered the same question. I forgot the details. Was Brahma there?
Yes.
Now we see that Prahlad is glorifying Brahma as the Supreme Spiritual Master.
No problem. Yeah. He is. He's glorious. He's setting the example of glorifying what he's the reference is. He's glorifying the personality of Godhead. So it's authorized. He's the head of the Sampradaya, of which my spiritual master is his disciple, and he's glorifying you, so that sets the standard. I want to do the same thing. It's elevating, purifying, edifying. I want to be able to do that too. And I want the association of such souls that do that to train me in that process.
Thank you, sir.
It does set Prahlad apart. What, pure devotion is not the same as a position of a demigod. To go from this, there's seven planetary systems that are upper and seven lower. So rather than the seven lower, from this Bhumandala, there's six more up. And just two of those six more up is Swarga. And Brahmaloka is at the very top of number seven of the upper planetary systems. But to go to heaven or the others, including Brahmaloka, it means there's some material desire. Less in Brahmaloka than here, and less in Brahmaloka than heaven, but some material desire. Because otherwise one would go to Vaikuntha. Prahlad is a Vaikunthavasi. The demigods are not. Even he's the head of our Sampradaya. Prabhupada said he's pure enough. he's selected by the personality of Godhead to receive the take the post of Brahma and to receive transcendental knowledge and distribute it within the universe. He's so qualified. So we honor him, as Prahlad is honoring him. At the same time, we can understand Prahlad is Shuddha Bhakta. He's in this very, very special, he's Vaikunthavasi, very special position. Okay?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. on one of the slides says accepting thoughts of exalted personalities through disciplic succession saves us a lot of trouble.
I got 50%. I'm sorry, I didn't catch the 100%.
I'm not able to quote it exactly, but the way I understood is accepting the thoughts of exalted personalities through disciplic succession takes us on the path of spiritual realization.
Takes us on the path of?
Spiritual realization.
Okay.
I think that I'm paraphrasing.
Okay.
How to accept the thoughts of exalted personalities?
How to?
When there's so much.
Where do we get them?
No, in the sense.
How to accept? From your heart.
There's so much mental speculation that blocks it.
Well, keep trying. That's sadhana. Scrub. Chaita dharpa namarjanam. Keep scrubbing. Cleansing the heart.
You mean chanting?
And hearing. And striving to understand, knowing the limitation you just described. This question that you just asked, you've asked in other ways at other times. It's like a standing question for you. But there's a means of purification. And that we have to start from wherever we are, and we take the means of purification to get to where we want to go. And the means of purification works. Even we have our limitation. Knowing our limitation, it's like medicine from a physician. You have a certain disease. Here's the medicine, here's the diet. Yeah, but I got a disease. I mean, that's your question. Yes, it's recognized. Now here's the medicine, here's the diet. Please take it. As prescribed. It works. It's effective to remove not just the symptoms of the disease, but the disease. It may take a while for the medicine to work, but it's good medicine. A good diagnosis, good medicine. You just have to be a good patient and take the diet, follow the diet, take the medicine. Prashadam part is easy. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Anybody else? Are we done? Krishna Arjuna. Over there.
Charan Paswami, it's the fact that the fact that Prahlad was being offered a material benediction, it seems something outside the realm of a devotional relationship. So it's and his response was one of anger. So it seems a little unusual that he should have been offered.
He hasn't been offered. He's saying, don't offer me these things. But he hasn't been offered. Would you like, bubble gum? Or a kingdom, or, something material? He hasn't been offered. Please don't offer me those things. Lord Nrisimhadev, two things. Lord Nrisimhadev knows his heart, and he knows that in his heart there is no attraction for anything material. They're not about to tempt him. and the nature of Vishnu or Krishna. There's a really nice verse in the fifth canto that goes something like this, paraphrased. The Supreme Lord says, I'm not such a fool. My devotee comes to me for something material. I'm not give them something material. But even if I do, it'll be done in such a way that they'll never have the desire for that something material again, because I'll give them my two lotus feet. You know, it's like Dhruva getting the kingdom. But he gave his two lotus feet, and so no longer such a desire, although he had the kingdom, even when he had the kingdom. That's Lord Vishnu, or, you know, exactly as you're indicating, why it seems inappropriate, or, you know, why would he offer something material? He's not. Now, there are places that are a little surprising for me. When he wants to have good offspring, and so he goes to Lord Vishnu, he offers the Hansaguya prayers, sixth canto, and then Lord Vishnu recognizes he's a mixed devotee at best. He's a proud person too. He thinks of himself as expert, daksha. So he gives him something that can help him become purified ultimately, which means that he gets Narada's association again. But it looked like a material something, but it's leading to Narada's association again. Anything else? Yes, Premananda. Over by the door. Oh, here we go. Can you turn the button on to green?
Is it fine?
Yeah.
Isn't it the answer which you just gave? Personally, if you ask me, I believe, isn't it, the earthly desires leads to enlightenment. So if somebody wants something materialistic, so it's absolutely fine to ask for, or if they can get it.
Okay. What you're saying is a verse in the Bhagavatam. It uses the phrase udara di. Udara di. Broad intelligence. Akama, sarvakama va, moksha kama, udharadi, tivrena bhakti yogena, yajeta purusham param. You follow the meaning without giving the word. So, you may be way over here, way over there, way over there. But those who are udharadi, tivra bhakti. So, what's the consequence of tivra bhakti? It's one comes to the position, like Dhruva, one comes to the position, I no longer have this material desire. That's because the reciprocation with Lord Vishnu and with Narada. He became relieved of that, both the material desire and the get-back mentality. Both. Because both are material. He was relieved of them. So, yes. But the goal should be, or if done properly, the goal of tivra bhakti, even with strong material desire, is to get on the other side of the material desire.
How we can reach to that position where we can say actually we don't have any materialistic desire?
Well,
because, I mean,
how do we get there? Is your question?
Yeah, I understood, but. Being as a normal human being, like
you're a normal human being,
else.
And the rest of us too. So you're not. It's not a finger pointing, you know, program.
Yeah, Yes, no. So the normal as a human being, of course, we all are looking for in a future really to understand the true meaning of the life or the God or the nature. But in a daily life, we really get stuck with the daily challenges, whether it can be relationship or the finances or the job or the health,
etc.
I mean, these are the materialistic things normally what I feel I'm looking forward for. But this is not the ultimate goal of the life. So how I can really grow as a human being beyond this point?
How you can go beyond the material things
yes.
that occupy your thoughts?
Practically how I can apply in daily life.
Well, Rupa Goswami gives us the formula. You ready? Anasaktasya Vishayan. You know the meaning of Vishaya? Vishaya means sense enjoyment. Anasaktasya. Asakti means attachment. Attachment. Anasakti is without attachment. Anasaktasya Vishayan. Without the attachment to sense gratification. According to Yatarham upayunjitaha, according to what is suitable for you, may not be suitable for him, may not be suitable for that person, but according to your nature, that which is suitable for you, accept things. In the mood that this should be dedicated to Krishna's service. Now, the operative power or force is to be engaged in Krishna's service. So that comes from association and devotional practices and sadhusanga and the things that go with sadhusanga, bhajana kriya, devotional activity. That nourishes the bhakti creeper, the power of devotion in the heart. And then that takes care of displacing the sense gratification thing. Instead, let me direct this for the pleasure of Krishna. Just take the example of somebody I know who's in the room who has some singing capacity. And it's just a gift that God has given them. Now they could use that, for sense gratification and enjoy and attract others and go. In fact, Narada Muni, before he became a Shudra, he was Gandharva. And he was very handsome. So he would sing songs so the girls would become attracted to him. Because he was a good singer. And there was a religious function in the heavenly planets, and he was, doing the woo 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 girls, singing program. And one of the sages understood exactly his mindset, cursed him, you become a Sudra. You fell from the heavenly realm. So, how to use gifts that God has given us, not for sense gratification, but for service to Him. So that's the practice of sadhana bhakti, daily cultivation of the mood of serving Krishna, and then we take those things that we have and we offer them to Krishna. We don't throw them away. We don't use them for sense gratification. We direct them in service to Krishna. So the focus goes to the cultivation of bhakti. That's the answer to your question. The cultivation of bhakti takes care of the sense gratification part and the false renunciation part. Because, I don't like the entanglement and the pain that goes along with the whole program, so let me make it zero. Let me take that which is God has given and offer it to God. Palm full of Ganges offered to the Ganges. Yeah? Okay. Premananda, you had something? And I think we're going to end with this.
Maharaj, during your last visit, you mentioned about this Paravasta forms of the Lord.
Which one?
The Paravasta forms of the Lord, Lord Narsingadev, Lord Ram and Lord Krishna.
Okay.
And I mean, today when you began your class, you spoke about the situation of Shishupal. It was extraordinary that he got killed and his soul merged into the body of the Supreme Lord.
Yeah.
And in the Laghu Bhagavadamrita, it is stated that Shishupal was really attracted to the sweet names and also the forms. Even though he carried hatred from the previous two lifetimes, he still had, he was calling the names of Krishna and he was seeing the form of Krishna. So is that, and also it is stated that in the form of Krishna there is that all attractive feature which is always consistently present, unlike the other forms. So is that a combination of those two, which was that exceptional situation in the case of Shishupal compared to his previous two lifetimes when he got killed by Lord Ram or Narsingadev?
Yeah. Well, yes, and we heard in Chicago that from, again, Vishwanath explaining Rupa Goswami's teachings. Anyway, someone that has both scorn and animosity, specifically speaking about Shishupal, they may see the Lord, but they can't see him as he is. Only when the mind is fixed can one see the Lord as he is. Otherwise we'll see him in some other way, distorted way. Specific, it's anger. Scorn and envy, if I think that's the tool. Fear, that's the one. Because Kamsa also saw Krishna, but he saw, his mind was attached to Krishna out of fear, and Shishupal was attached to Krishna, thinking of Krishna out of animosity. Neither of them could see Krishna properly. And then he goes the other direction and says from scripture, one can see the form of the Lord when there's this feature of friendliness. So Shishupal didn't have that friendliness or service mood. Therefore, he didn't go directly to the spiritual realm, but this merging became the consequence. Is that... Now, distinct from the other two, there's this really long purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita where specifically it mentions that Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha saw the forms that they saw as some mystical person that had a mystical power to show that particular form, and they thought him as a powerful person like they are powerful persons. And therefore they didn't get liberation. They didn't, you know, get their ultimate destination. And then they gave birth again and took birth again. But Shishupal had this, as you described, some attraction but not accepting the divinity of Krishna, while at the same time scorn, which is odd. Scorn but some attraction. It's a little bit like Putana. When she saw Krishna, she thought, oh, he's so beautiful. Let me kill him. Some maternal feeling and some terrible behavior and attitude. So Krishna accepted from Putana the motherly part and gave her a position in the spiritual world. Interesting. So Shishupal didn't have that favorable. He had some attraction of the feature of Krishna, but envy. He hated Krishna. So then his destination, merging. I had a little dialogue with Bhanu Swami. What happened after that, after he merged with the body of Krishna? He was returned to the Vaikuntha realm as one of the gatekeepers of Lord Narayan. Now, it doesn't give the technology, but our acharyas say, from that position emerging, he went. He was just restored by Narayana's mercy because that was his original position. Did that answer your question? Microphone? Somebody's phone is on. Okay, well, we'll end there. Thank you all for your patience. Happy New Year. Subal? In the car, there's a small roller bag. In the small roller bag, there's some Mahaprasadam. There goes Subal. So now, what's next on your schedule?
There is Prasadam downstairs, but they can wait and get Mahaprasadam.
Yeah, but he's going to take a while to get to his car. Is there any one more question while he goes to get the Mahaprasadam? Anyone? Anything? We're stalling for time, so come up with a question. Yes.
Hare Krishna.
It's on. Thank you.
While answering Mataji's question, you said that it is important for us to see the God in its clear form. Like as you said, the Shishupal was not able to see Krishna clearly. He was seeing in perspective of animosity.
Yes.
As a human being, how do I see clear form? What is clear form of God?
How do you see the pure form of God?
Clear form? Yeah, the word that you mentioned. I'm just trying to understand the meaning of the phrase.
I'm not sure what you're asking. Are you?
What's
the difference between a clear form and an unclear form? I don't understand that.
In that context, okay.
In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 11, Arjuna asks Krishna to show his universal form. If you feel that I can see. So Krishna says, I'll give you the eyes to see, and he shows him his universal form in verses and verses and verses describing the universal form. And Arjuna is feeling overwhelmed. This is a very fearful form. Please remove it and show me your original form. So then first Krishna shows the forearm form before his original form, and then shows his two-arm form and describes this form can only be seen by devotion. And then he says that conversely, one can ordinarily one cannot see this form. So no. He's on the battlefield with Arjuna, and there's many people who are seeing him on the battlefield with Arjuna, but they're not seeing as Arjuna is seeing, because Arjuna is seeing with the eye of devotion. So he can see the original personality of Godhead in his original form. Now, Shishupal was even further away because he was inimical. And so he could see Krishna, but he couldn't see him clearly. He could see something, but not clearly, not because clearly means with devotion. And when one has devotion, then one can see clearly, properly. So, well, it's a roller bag. There's a little... Oh, you got it. Okay, thank you. Okay, so... Does that answer? Here's another example. When Duryodhana wanted to kill Krishna in the assembly where Krishna came to make the peace settlement, and he rejected the peace settlement, and Krishna said, you're going to ruin your whole dynasty and you're a bad person. He walked out in a big huff. So then they got together a plan to come back in and kill Krishna, because they figured if we kill Krishna, the Pandavas will give up. So we just have to kill Krishna. So they had a plan to kill Krishna, and Krishna knew it because he's omniscient. And when they, on cue, they came to attack Krishna, he showed his partial universal form. Not the same as Arjuna, but the partial universal form. And Duryodhana saw that, everyone stopped in their tracks, but he was thinking, oh, he's got some mystic power. He couldn't see, this is the Supreme Lord showing his partial universal form. It's something mystical, and he couldn't see. He refused to see. Couldn't accept Krishna. So, same, Shishupal couldn't accept Krishna, although he was seeing, but he couldn't see in the way that Arjuna could see, or the other Pandavas could see. Grandfather Bhishma could see, because of their devotion. He couldn't see that way. Couldn't see clearly. Therefore, he went on with his business of making offense. Does that help? Okay. Okay. Thank you very much, Prabhupada. He died. Yeah.